Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with the chairman of the Central Wasatch Commission, also a member of the Summit County Council, Chris Robinson, with details from last week's discussion on the transit alternatives proposed. There is a public comment period underway. In fact, if you don't like any of the alternatives that they suggested, they are also letting you design your own mountain transportation system. We'll be talking about that. Also, the executive officer of the Utah Commemorative Air Force Wing, Skip Slyfield, with details about the B-25 visit at the Russ McDonald Airfield through Sunday. Park City Summit County Arts Council Director Jocelyn Scudder with details on Friday's Sip and Stroll. And then finally, Park City Ski and Snowboard Executive Director Christy Hine will be in along with Nordic Combined Coach Adam Lewis. They've got details about the upcoming winter season, the ski swap, as well as some upcoming outdoor fundraising events. Stay tuned. Well, Summit County is bringing the town of Hideout back to court, saying that town officials there are violating a court order. On Monday, Summit County filed a motion for an order to show cause, asking why the court shouldn't find the Wasatch County town in contempt of court for continuing its efforts to annex property from another county. Even after 4th District Court Judge Jennifer Brown issued an injunction September 3rd prohibiting Hideout from pursuing any annexation of property located in Summit County, the Hideout Town Council a week later voted to proceed with a new annexation of 350 acres of property. Under this new annexation resolution, Hideout removed several hundred acres of property that was under the protection of a development agreement with Park City. Now, Summit County is arguing that the new annexation plan is virtually the same, only with a bit less land. Because of that, Summit County attorneys say Hideout, in concert with developer Nate Brockbank, is violating the court's preliminary injunction. In its injunction, the court granted Summit County's motion that Hideout be prohibited from taking any action which would result in the annexation of property in Summit County. Hideout is arguing that it should be allowed to proceed with the new annexation boundaries since it has vacated the original annexation resolution. But by doing so, Summit County says that Hideout has changed the status quo, which violates the court's order. The county alleges that Hideout's replacement of the original annexation resolution served a more sinister purpose to hide the fact that Hideout was only pretending to settle with Summit County as a way to distract the county as Hideout continued its pursuit of annexation. Summit County's new motion says these purportedly new annexation documents are simply repackaged versions of the former resolution and annexation agreements and are just wolves in sheep's clothing. Hideout's recent moves, the motion says, are clearly designed to frustrate the court's preliminary injunction and to proceed under what is essentially the plan that they rolled out in the July pre-annexation agreement. Hideout's rebranded agreement, says Summit County, just set the table to, quote, unilaterally shoehorn a massive commercial development into a hotly contested corner of Summit County. The county also writes that Hideout is not alone in this mischief, and developer Nate Brockbank is also engaged in a course of conduct to improve Hideout's position in violation of the court's temporary restraining order. A hearing to argue the order show cause has not yet been scheduled. Hideout Mayor Phil Rubin told KPCW that they are not making any comments during the pendency of the litigation. Wasatch County reported its second highest single-day total of COVID cases on Wednesday. KPCW's Jessica Lowell has more on that.
Wasatch County reported 11 new cases, which is the highest number the county has seen since the beginning of June, when they reported 12 new cases in one day. Chris Smoot is the epidemiologist at Wasatch County Health Department. He says there are multiple unknown factors at play with this new rise in cases.
So our preliminary information does not appear to show that there's any one particular event or facility or anything like that that's driving this. It seems more of an uptick just community-wide. We have had a few families that have had like the whole household test positive, so that's contributed as well. But we have definitely seen just a broader uptick in cases.
And he says the new cases aren't just from one age group, but now there are more young people testing positive.
So we have had some students, both public school students and then some college students as well, maybe a little more represented in these numbers than in the past.
Earlier this week, Utah Governor Gary Herbert said he wouldn't issue a statewide mask mandate. And Smoot says right now, Wasatch County isn't looking to move forward with a mask mandate either.
We are still trying to encourage the community to provide them the best education we can on why mask use is helpful, and how it can be beneficial to each of us, right, to try to minimize the spread and keep us going, keep our economy running, keep people healthy.
Smoot says residents in Wasatch County should continue to follow safety measures like social distancing, washing hands, and staying home when they feel sick. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
Well, as part of its Mountain Transportation System initiative, the Central Wasatch Commission hosted a panel last Friday to initiate the second public comment period for this initiative. There was some discussion of some Park City Summit County issues. The commission is now asking the public for input on three draft transit alternatives that it's released. On the phone with a look at what's being considered, I have the chair of the Central Wasatch Commission, also a member of the Summit County Council, Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Leslie.
So earlier this year, more than 1,200 comments were received from more than 350 individuals on the scope, the goals, the attributes of a mountain transportation system. Before we kind of get into the alternatives that were drafted and released as a result of that input, let's first just talk a little bit about what a mountain transportation system is. I mean, is it different than what we have now, which are what, park and ride lots, buses, carpool lanes, things like that?
Well, it's different in that what you listed were elements of a system. The system is kind of more of a holistic view of how it all works together and where those elements are spread out over the whole geographic reach. And in this case, what we're talking about is the Central Wasatch, which laps into Summit County and would include I-80 and 248, 224, and laps on the west side of the mountain, of course, into the shoulder jurisdictions of Cottonwood Heights and Mill Creek and the Salt Lake Valley. And so it's looking at the whole area. How does transportation function in that whole area, given that Central Wasatch is experiencing on both sides of it, you know, exponential growth in use, and it's projected to just get used more and more.
Right.
You know, COVID's been a temporary sort of accelerant, but you know, it seems like we like to recreate, and we really value the mountains and being out in them. Those of us in Park City, especially, but lots of other people too, and visitors. And it's a big part of our economy. So,
and certainly that's what we've heard. You know, when the Cottonwood Canyon's at their most jam, I mean, we've got rampant parking along Wasatch Boulevard. We've got, you know, just bumper to bumper traffic, in fact, and, you know, extending like 3-4 hours. I remember hearing during a snowstorm last winter. So, unless something changes, no one's going anywhere quickly, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I would say one thing, Leslie, too, that we call it a mountain transportation system, but it is a transit system. What we are proposing is not more vehicles, passenger vehicles. We're talking about plenty more cars.
So the commission asked now for public input on
Cottonwood. Excuse me.
You're kind of cutting out, so I thought it was my. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, it doesn't take much of a hiccup for the passenger cars to get jammed up, and then the transit gets jammed up too, and it's more interconnected with it. I mean, there's even situations I think where if one of the Cottonwood Canyons or both are plugged up, then it shifts visitation to us on the back. And so that's, I guess, to answer your earlier question, the difference is that it's more of a holistic view and it's from a transit lens.
Okay. The commission is asking for public input on the three draft alternatives. There are also some sub-alternatives. Alternative one includes working on Salt Lake to Park City transit, bus rapid transit along 224. This is what we've been working on, though, for a while here, right? The BRT lanes that would be on the outside lanes of 224?
Yes. I mean, we we applied, Summit County and Park City applied for a federal grant, and unfortunately we came up short. Yes, that BRT along 224 would be a big deal, having dedicated lanes.
Okay.
It would really make our Electric Express bus, it would give it the edge to do an end run around the traffic, make it the most effective and time effective method to get in and out of town.
So coming up short on that federal grant, does that mean that project does not move forward?
It's a long game, not a short game. We struck out this year, and we thought we were going to get it. There's some explanations on it. It's very competitive, but we had a good project. But no, we're going to keep chipping away at it. It would have been nice to have got this build grant. Yes, that would have really, set the schedule. But it'll happen. It just takes time.
For the Cottonwood Canyons, Alternative One includes features for buses and shuttles and tolling. What's that?
Tolling is where you charge for entrance, like a turnpike or something. And the combination of parking and tolling are tools that will charging for parking and tolling are tools that will disincentivize people taking their passenger car up.
Sure.
They're used. If you don't have a real robust transit, then it's the same thing we've been talking about. We haven't been talking tolling, but you've got to have efficient transit that's a better alternative. And then there's also becomes the path of least resistance too when there's tolling on the road or if there's paid parking at the resort. So then you think twice, okay, if I have to pay to go up the canyon and I have to pay for parking, why don't I just take the bus? And if the bus is really well done and efficient, or take the gondola or take whatever the transit mode is, if it's really good, then you're going to do that. But tolling and paid parking are part of the disincentives.
Sure, but
of demand management.
Sure, but how do we get to that place where we pick up the bus? I mean, do we have land to park cars? Is that part of this as well?
Well, that's part of coming up with a good system. I mean, it doesn't do any good to have a great transit system if you just push the problem somewhere else, right? I mean, if there's no place to get on it, if it's not convenient, in the case of the Wasatch Front, there's some capture points that are being discussed at the mouth of the Cottonwood Canyon where there's a gravel pit. There's different places along 9400 South. And, it has to be looked at, from a broader lens than if there's no way to leave your vehicle, or if you can't take the transit from further away, then it's not going to work.
Let's move on because we don't have a whole lot of time. Alternative two is basically the same as what we've been talking about, but a gondola would be added. From where to where?
Well, the gondola, what UDOT is looking at in their EIS for Little Cottonwood Canyon is the gondola from the mouth of Little Cottonwood Canyon up to Alta, and then there's sub alternatives. You could go into the Big Cottonwood Canyon, or you could come into Park City or Mayflower as sub alternatives. But it would generally be in Little Cottonwood Canyon.
Okay, so that would be
the base alternative would be in Little Cottonwood Canyon. There is a proposal to start it. It's called kind of the Lakai option, which has been promoted of having the western terminus be at Lakai, kind of around the Lakai restaurant area.
Sure. And again, alternative three is similar to number one, but it mentions a cog rail. Again, this would replaced, instead of the gondola, we would have a cog rail from Lakai to Little Cottonwood or to Alta?
Yes, or it may not be from Lakai, but it might be up 9400 South, or it could be at the mouth of Big Cottonwood Canyon, or it could be at the mouth of Little Cottonwood Canyon. Those are all details, but yes, it would be. There are pros and cons of all of these different alternatives.
Only one sub-alternative mentions jumping the mountain, if you will. It's a Brighton to Park City gondola connection, an alignment for 6 miles, travel time about 25 minutes. Does Summit County and Park City favor this?
I don't know. The connecting by tunnel is a clear answer, no. I don't know who favors that. I don't know if the resorts would. You know, when we brought it up before, there was a different ownership pattern in between Deer Valley and Solitude than there is now. And I don't know how that would, it'd be good to get some public input on that.
There was another sub-alternative, which was an Alta to Brighton gondola for 3 miles. But what does this do? I mean, it still is bringing traffic up the canyons to get on the gondola.
Yes. I mean, I think one of the challenges in the Cottonwood Canyons is, especially Little Cottonwood, is there's no emergency egress. And so there's been a big push by out of Alta and by even by the ski resort of Alta to make a connection into Big Cottonwood Canyon. And of course, there are challenges to that because the dispersed recreationists would fear that would lead to a ridgeline jumping off point from an aerial system that would then destroy the backcountry experience. Mm-hmm. So that there are detractors for that, and it would have to be, you know, very carefully controlled if that were to happen, you know, prohibiting a jumping off point. So you can't open up to now non-human powered ascent to tackle all that backcountry.
So during Friday's panel discussion, did you get any feedback specifically with regard to the Wasatch Back or that gondola between Brighton and Park City?
No, our format was that we accepted a bunch of questions, and there weren't any about that. So I think it'd be a great opportunity in the next 30 days for our community to weigh in on that, what they think.
If people missed the panel event, there is a video recording on the Central Wasatch Commission's website. They have opened a 30-day public comment period. That ends October 18th, and we'll put those links on our website. The commission is also inviting interactive feedback by allowing people to design their own mountain transportation system. This is online at surveymts.com. Can you tell us what that experience is?
You know, it's a way where you're given a budget and it allows you to play around with different options, combinations of different modes, and it's instructive to kind of see how some of the trade-offs are, and it's educational and fun. I hope people will try it.
Okay. Does that stay up past October 18th then?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Chris, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I'm appreciative of your coverage of this and spreading the word. I guess that'd be the only thing.
All right. Hey, appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good day.
That's Chairman of the Central Wasatch Commission and Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. 8:30, good morning. Well, the B-25 Made in the Shade is on display at the Russ McDonald Airfield in Heber City through Sunday. There's also an opportunity to ride in that plane for a prize. On the phone with details, the executive officer of the Utah Commemorative Air Force Wing, Skip Slyfield. Good morning, Skip.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. How are you doing today?
Doing well. You confused us here, calling on different numbers. But tell us about the plane. It's known as the B-25 J. Mitchell. The only one, I understand, flown by the Army, Navy, and Marines.
Yes, that's correct. Almost 10,000 of them were built for World War II, and they had, I would say, probably the most iconic and successful medium bomber in World War II. They were used for ground strafing, medium altitude bombing and such, and that is absolutely correct. The Navy had a version, and Army Air Corps, and the Marines flew them as well, different designations.
Okay, so you have it on display there in Heber City. It makes its home where? Usually in Arizona somewhere?
It's in Arizona, down at Falcon Field, just outside of Scottsdale. We are actually the Utah wing of the Commemorative Air Force, and we are hosting this aircraft, which is from the Arizona wing. The Commemorative Air Force is an international organization based in Texas, and each wing has an aircraft assigned to it, and we maintain and fly them, and we do that to educate, to inspire, and to honor the men and women who flew these aircraft in World War II, who built them, and who maintained them.
Okay. So, as I mentioned, people can tour the plane. How does that work? When and how much?
Well, the tours are this is going on all week. We're open from 9 till 6 p.m. out at the Commemorative Air Force Museum at the Heber Russ McDonald Airport, and they can come on out. Our museum is open, and actually you'll enter through the Utah Wing Museum, and the aircraft is open for tour all day today, and then flight operations will start on Friday, and they'll be in the morning. You can buy a ride with the Arizona Wing for $590 for a front jump seat, which is quite the view. And then $325 for the waist gunner seats. And they still have some seats available. I'll give you those websites here in a minute. We also have our own wing aircraft, which are 1943 trainers, World War II trainers, a PT-13 open cockpit biplane trainer that almost every World War II World War II pilot started in. And then we have an advanced trainer at T-6 Texan, and those are available for rides all day.
Okay, so will people be able to tour, walk through the B-25 or just kind of walk
around
correct. It?
Yeah, certainly. They can do both. The tour cost $10 a person for the B-25 and $20 per family, and they're get quite an extensive view of the inside of the aircraft, but also you can just walk around and take pictures, and we have other aircraft on display, including our PV-2 Harpoon Navy bomber 1945 that's out there, and our aircraft as well.
All right. So do people need to make a reservation for the tours themselves? I understand.
No, they come on out. Mm-hmm. Just come on out, and they'll set you up for that. They're running their own separate tours, but it's right. It's all in the same place there. If folks want to get a flight, it's actually best to get on the Arizona CAF website, which is azcaf.org, and there's also a telephone number, 480-462-2992, or as I said, just come on out. The rides are filling up pretty fast at B-25, and best way to book a ride for the AF Utah aircraft, which we'll be flying through November, is to go to our website at the CAFUtahWing.org.
Okay. And so you do this occasionally. You bring in these historic planes for display and rides as sort of a fundraiser?
Oh, absolutely. This is probably our major fundraiser for this year. We were scheduled to have the plane also from the Arizona Wing, but because of COVID-19, of course, that got shut down. They were able to make this tour, so we're really happy about that. And we typically, in the summertime here in Utah, at the Heber Airport, have hangar dances, and we have plane and car photo shoots, and memorial flyovers, of course, for July 4th and D-Day and things like that.
Okay. So the museum's been open during the pandemic, huh?
Well, we opened, didn't open until July, actually, and with limited hours. Right now, we're open Friday and Saturday from 9 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, and also by appointment. We do quite a few tours, and have done Boy Scout events, merit badges and such. And again, this is by appointment.
Okay. And let's see, again, it's closing down October 31st and then won't be reopening until May 1st of next year?
That's correct. That's correct. We'll be out there pretty much every weekend working on airplanes, and we will be flying through probably December with our aircraft. But it's usually possible to get a tour if you just give us a call and set one up.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Skip?
No, that's about it. Just come on out and view these beautiful historic aircraft. It's a beautiful day for flying. There's all sorts of stuff to see out there, including we've got some firefighting operations going. So it's almost like a free air show. It's really kind of fun.
Okay. Skip, appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks so much, Leslie. Have a great day.
Skip Liefeld, again, the executive officer with Utah Commemorative Air Force Wing. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:37. We'll celebrate the end of summer with the Arts Council. The Last Friday Gallery Stroll is happening tomorrow. On the phone with details, I have the director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council, Jocelyn Scottier. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for making time to have me on.
Yeah, so what's happening tomorrow?
Yeah, so we are hosting an event on Townless Plaza called An End of Summer Sip and Stroll. And so for those of you who don't know the Arts Council really well, we are a local nonprofit that supports both Park City and Summit County, and our mission is to serve our arts and culture community by driving creative programming, providing valuable resources, and cultivating connections. And so this event is one of the ways that we're actually further activating our pop-up storefront, temporary storefront, Crate PC. We've hosted, some of you may know this, but we've hosted kind of a local artist co-op on Main Street for the past year in different locations. Previously, we were at 660 Main Street at the old Zoom restaurant, and now we're actually relocated further down on Lower Main at 825 Main Street, right next to Burton. And through that lease agreement, our landlord was really generous to give us some access to the Townless Plaza up right next to the Bridge Cafe. And so we're taking advantage of that and some good weather that we still have here with our early fall. And we decided to do a pop-up sip and stroll where during gallery stroll, so every last Friday of the month, there's a gallery stroll where you can go and check out the 20-some galleries that are on Main Street and in Prospector area. And so we really wanted to jump on that bandwagon, support gallery stroll, and also have this outdoor event where we're going to have about 15 plus, we're still maybe having a couple signups of our local artists who participate in Create PC. They are going to have artist booths up on the town lift. And then we also will have some live music. We have Will Baxter Trio, a local band, to come play some music. And then we're working with The Bridge. They've been really generous to work with us. They're usually only open for breakfast and lunch, but they've agreed to sell beer and wine through The Bridge. So it's a really great collaboration between local restaurant, music, and our local artists. And it's really just meant to be a fun reason to get out, socially distanced. We're outside. We will encourage everyone to wear masks when they come check us out. But it's just a great way that I think the avenue for us is making sure that we're providing ways for our artists to sell their work. And so we're really excited to present this. And it's actually, we're using a little bit of grant funding that we received from the Park City Sunrise Rotary. So we really appreciate their support as well.
Okay. So how many artists are participating then?
We have around 15 signed up right now, but some are joining late, just knowing that I think this is going to be a great event, a great reason to get out and showcase their talent. So, but we have 15 confirmed, so you can count on that. And this will be, it'll start at 6. So traditionally, gallery stroll always is from 6 to 9 p.m. on the last Friday of the month. We might not stay open quite till 9, depending on how cold it gets. And, you know, it's starting to get dark around 8 o'clock these days. So, but we'll have the band from 6 to 8, definitely. So that'll be great. And we just hope people stop by, support their local artists, have a beverage, and enjoy maybe a nice sunset looking over Town Lift.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I do want to make a quick plug for a voting initiative, RAP Tax, this year. Some of you may be familiar with what RAP Tax is. It's a critical funding resource for many of our nonprofits. both on the recreation side and arts. And it is actually, it's a tax that was that Summit County residents voted on in 2000. And it's been a sales tax and use tax that's been in place for the last 20 years. It was reauthorized in 2010, and here we are in 2020, and it's an opportunity to reauthorize it. Wrap tax is going to be Proposition 21 on the ballot, and it's a wonderful way for our residents to invest and support our recreation nonprofits and arts nonprofits in our community to enhance our beautiful town and the way we live here. So if you like rodeo, if you are an art supporter, if you like going to concerts, if you're into history, there's chances are you've received the benefits of wrap tax, and we hope you'll vote yes on November 3rd for Proposition 21.
Okay. Jocelyn Scudder, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
Jocelyn Scudder, again, is the Executive Director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. News time, 8:42. Well, officially fall now, and that means preparation for the upcoming winter season. In the studio with a look at what that might look like for members of the Park City Ski and Snowboard Team, I have Executive Director Christy Hine, along with Nordic Coach Adam Loomis. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, Christy, let's talk with you first here and talk about registration. So are you accepting registrations for...
So we sure are. So we had an amazing summer. We brought 600 kids back and I think 77 coaches. So notwithstanding the pandemic, kids were able to come, train, be outside in the pool, do dry land in the parks. It was really awesome. And winter registration opened late July. So we are open and ready and making lots of plans for the winter season.
Yeah, so what do the numbers look like? I mean, are people coming back?
Yeah, so enrollment year to year is actually up, which we're really excited about. As you can imagine, and as many in the community know, the competition season is uncertain, but getting kids out and training and fit, and more importantly, being with one another, you know, being able to have peer-to-peer and team relationships is super important. So, you know, enrollment is happening, and we've got kids who are enrolled in Alpine. They're already getting ready for the winter season and training and doing dry land, and that's sort of across disciplines.
Yeah. So what does the competition season look like? I mean, what are some of the discussions being held?
So, you know, everything, it's regional. I think we're going to see some regional races. I think that the national and international races are really TBD. So it puts us in an unusual position of having to both plan for these things and then also contemplate maybe just a really awesome training year. So we just don't know. Word is coming out, dripping out, I should say, kind of on a daily basis. But really, we look to the ski team and to FIS for our higher level athletes. But we will ensure that there are local competitions at a minimum.
Yeah, so I mean, when we talk about some of the regional races, I mean, we're talking about like the Intermountain Championships
exactly.
And things
yeah.
like that would be happening.
John Bukar, for example, our Alpine director, is in conversations with IMD, weekly for certain. And what we're really trying to figure out is what can the resorts do to host us safely? Our partner resort, you know, Park City Mountain, I know, is a champion of kids, and they're going to do everything they can to get us on mountains safely for some competitions. So hosted races, competitions, those things are really, it's a very dynamic environment, as you know, Leslie. So we'll be keeping everybody posted as we learn more.
Yeah. Tell me about with the announcement of the reservation system at Park City Mountain. What does that mean for your team members? I mean, you have to make a reservation for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday?
Yeah, we have not gotten the final word. What I can tell you is that anecdotally, at least, we're hearing that the mountain's going to do what they can to accommodate athletes. We're certainly not hearing that it's guest only and we don't care about kids. We're certainly not hearing that. But they're working through their system. And I think corporate really is trying to figure out on a resort by resort basis what they can do to accommodate athletes. We've heard everything from perhaps having sort of an athlete village type situation, but we haven't been told that we have to make reservations in order to get a kid training. So, but we have not gotten a final word. We're just waiting to hear from them.
Yeah, and Adam, you've come on as the new Nordic coach?
Yep, so ski jumping and Nordic combined. I came on this spring and was able to start training with the athletes right away June 1st, which all things considered, it's been definitely not a normal year, but we've been able to train as much as ever, so we're counting our blessings there.
Yeah. So that's your background then in ski jumping?
And yep. Mm-hmm. So I lived in Park City from 2012 to 2018 as a athlete on the U.S. Nordic Combined Team. After retiring, I went on to coaching up in Anchorage, Alaska. I always knew I wanted to come back here, and there was a good fit for me.
Great. Let's talk just a little bit about Ski Swap. Again, that's usually held the first weekend in November.
Yep.
And plans are that's going to go ahead?
So plans are in flux, but we are committed to holding some version of the Ski Swap. What's difficult is to contemplate a ski swap that's held indoors. So we are working with Summit County Health Department and vendors, and we should be able to make an announcement soon. But I would say ski swap is going to happen. One way that it could happen that would be innovative is to do it in a farmer's market style. So one of the things that we're thinking about is how can we hold this event outdoor? We know this is an important event for the community. It's important to the vendors. It's really important to be able to come and, but not to gather in the way that you would historically. I mean, Ski Swap is somewhat social, as you probably know, and it's also can be a bit of a madhouse, particularly on that Friday night. So we're looking to figure out if there's a way that we can set up reservation times to come to Ski Swap. We just want to do it as safely as possible in keeping with the way that we've brought people back to sport. You know, we take a fairly conservative approach to how we have people be together even outdoors. So Ski Swap will be full of lots of protocols, but we contemplate it will happen as I sit here today. But, you know, that everything could be different even a week from now.
All right. That is one of your biggest, if not biggest, fundraiser of the year, right? So it's kind
of
important.
Yeah, for certain. Yeah. I mean, look, revenue is always something that matters. But, you know, safety first, right? So I do think we will do Ski Swap. It will be a smaller version, most likely. We're also trying to figure out, you know, the wisdom of having hard goods versus soft goods. Maybe we can have vendors with soft goods. I mean, it's a very complicated, complex event to host even without COVID. But look, our team is working every day on that, and we have a lot of good partners, and I feel a high level of confidence that it's going to happen. And that's November 6th, 7th, and 8th.
All right. You also raise a lot of money at Jan's Winter Welcome every year. And of course, that's being done virtually this year. I mean, is that going to hit you financially?
Yeah. So we, you know, back in May, sort of from the April to May timeframe, like every other organization and business in town, we went through pretty intense business continuity planning. And that meant that I, along with our finance committee, really kind of impacted artificially, if you will, our budget. So we took down the amount of money we intend to bring in or think that we can bring in through Jan's Winter Welcome. That said, we are still hoping that our community will buy opportunity tickets and that our families and other members will help us create or come up with experiences that can still be auctioned off online.
Okay. And Adam, you're pretty involved in organizing a couple of fundraisers. First, the Trail Series. That starts tomorrow night. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it does. So we're excited to get that off and running. We're doing a 4-event Trail Series this fall. They're all going to be on Friday evenings starting tomorrow night. Our first race, we'll have racers starting as soon as 5 o'clock. And we're going to do that. You know, it's going to be a smaller event compared to some that we've done. And we're also going to do rolling starts. So runners, hikers get to choose when they want to start within that time window. We have official start time of 5:30, but we're not going to see a wave of starters at that time at any point. So it's going to be a safe environment. We'll definitely be out there, you know, making sure everyone has their masks on, keeps their distance, except for on course, where if runners have separation, they can definitely put their masks down and just enjoy the moment.
Okay, so I mean, you're going to be doing it by levels, you know, the fastest start first and then kind of...
To an extent, we are encouraging people that are expecting to be hiking to start on the sooner side because it, you know, sunsets before 7:30, now it's dark by around 8. But yeah, definitely our fastest runners, we hope to get on course at 5:30.
Okay. What's the cost then to do the
race? Those are $45 for one race. We also, you can register for the whole series. And they're really important as a fundraiser for our club. Like I said, to bring in a smaller event. It's a new thing for us. And we're also going to have some swag for racers and food truck up there. It should be a good time.
Okay. And they all start from the bottom there, or at the Utah Olympic Park?
Yep, right at the base of the ski jumps will be the start-finish for all of them.
Okay. Let's see. And you've also got the Bike the Bob. That's happening October 3rd, the first race ever up the bobsled track.
So I'll take that. So unfortunately, we've made the very difficult decision to cancel Bike the Bob, and here's why. While the trail series is local, we feel like it is almost entirely folks who are here in Summit County, our local community. Bike the Bob is much more likely to bring in folks from outside the community. It's a really unique event, and it's going to happen. We're just going to delay or postpone it. Right now, as almost everybody knows, there are COVID-19 cases spiking throughout Utah. And we really, at the end of the day, to make the event work as a fundraiser, needed about 200 participants. And it just didn't seem prudent to bring hundreds of bikers who, while you can control racers who are sort of standing at the start, having folks shoulder to shoulder going up that qualifier, which is up at the UOP, just didn't quite feel right. so we're going to postpone that most likely until the spring, but it is, you know, I mean, it is unique and somewhat novel. It's not the first time we've ever done a race up the Bob, but it's certainly the first time in recent times. And, you know, we were excited because so many races have been canceled, especially for those uphill cyclists in our community. But stay tuned, guys, because we're going to bring that back and it's going to be amazing. It'll be a really cool event.
Okay. Registration, parkcityss.org for the trail series. And any more information?
Yeah, you know, that's right on the landing page. So if you're thinking you might want to run, please visit the website. Please join us, because that's going to be a safe and robust and fun event.
Okay. Yep, and we're closing registration for tomorrow's race today at 8 p.m.
Okay, good to know. Anything else you want to mention?
No, just that we do have one program coming online for the first time this season that's going to be for some of the younger athletes in our community, ages 7 to 10. We're calling it the PCS Shredders. And the idea here, Leslie, is to introduce not never-evers, but kids who've skied, but who are looking for some fundamentals and skill development across the disciplines that we offer. So it'll be 3 weeks of Alpine, 3 weeks of free ski, freestyle, and 4 weeks of Nordic, including Nordic Combine and Cross Country. There's also going to be a snowboard add-on that will happen at Woodward. But everything else will happen at the UOP, so kids will get to see the beautiful new training venue and have an opportunity to meet our incredible roster of coaches. And lastly, we're going to have some luminaries and Olympians out there working with the kids. And this is a very low barrier to entry. It's an inexpensive and really exciting program. So look out for that after October 1st. It should be up on our website and available to register.
Speaking of that, the training facility, you've finished phase one and moving into phase two then?
We are. So I just can't say enough about phase one of the mountain expansion highway, as it's called. I think by all accounts, this new training center has blown everybody's expectations, including Alpine coaches in particular, who've said it's some of the best training they've ever seen in Park City. Phase two is something that the folks at the Utah Olympic Park and UOLF are working hard on. They learned a bunch. We're tweaking budgets, but all of the stakeholders are excited and anticipating phase two to begin soon.
Okay. Hey, Adam and Chrissy, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:55. 8:56 now, good morning. Well, Summit County has fired off another legal volley in its annexation fight with the town of Hideout. On Wednesday, the county filed suit declaring it has a property interest in a parcel owned by Mayflower near Richardson Flat. That's one of the parcels that's targeted for annexation by Hideout and developer Nate Brockbank. The new lawsuit in 3rd District Court is filed against the Dutch company Stichting Mayflower under two corporate names, as well as Brockbank and five John Doe's. Hideout isn't named, but the suit does allege that the town has just launched its second annexation attempt and is acting urgently, barely a month before a repeal takes place for the bill that allows the Wasatch County town to annex into Summit County. The lawsuit says the annexation plan includes a portion of the Mayflower parcel SS-86 and Summit County assets that hold on two undefined 2 acres on two rights-of-way on a parcel based on a quitclaim deed from 1928. The county says that makes it a tenant in common, and they have to give consent for that parcel to be annexed. The lawsuit also says that without that consent, Hideout Town cannot connect all of the lands south of SS-86 and their proposed annexation, including other Mayflower parcels. The litigation repeats the allegations that Summit County has made in two other lawsuits about a so-called hostile annexation launched at them. The lawsuit says that Hideout, finding itself short of revenues to support itself, was approached by Bach Brank in 2019 with a proposal for a high-density mixed-use development in Summit County near Richardson Flat, despite the county's general plan, which calls for low-density residential there. It says that Hideout, in league with the developer, amended their annexation policy in August of last year. The suit also says that Brock Bank engaged in a misdirection campaign with Summit County officials by feigning interest in developing in their jurisdiction and then applying for a general plan amendment. In addition, the county alleges Brock Bank orchestrated a so-called bait and switch at last spring's Utah legislature. A bill dealing with annexation issues in Weber and Davis counties, House Bill 359, had consensus support. The suit contends that Brock Bank's attorney, Bruce Baird, wrote a substitute bill which stipulated that a city can annex into another county without that county's consent. It also allowed Hideout to enact a cherry stem annexation allowed along Highway 248. Lobbyist Michael Ostermiller reportedly passed on the revised 359 to its Senate sponsors, saying that it had just technical changes. That bill was approved in the 11th hour of the legislative session. Although the bill was repealed in the legislature's special session last month, that does not take effect until October 20th. Summit County's latest litigation on Wednesday came just hours after a court hearing where it faced off with Mayflower. The Dutch property company had to file suit to nullify a lien that Summit County had placed on SS-86 back in August. Their attorney, Stephen Bergman, said the lien was applied to the entire SS-86 parcel of nearly 147 acres and so was overbroad, inaccurate, and wrongful. However, Mayflower's motion was denied by 3rd District Court Judge Richard Mrazek. He ruled that the county had given sufficient detail about its claims and had not overstated or misrepresented them. Summit County is asking for declaratory relief and an injunction to prevent the annexation on SS-86 until they can conduct discovery into the defendants and all legal actions and complaints on the property are fully litigated.